You're listening to highlights from the Creative Processes interview with award-winning author and poet Hala Elyon. This podcast is supported by the Jan Michalski Foundation.
I think in some ways this memoir was a project of sifting through and excavating the darkest hours, both for me and for the lineage and the ancestry that I came from. I think the darkest hours were, you know, so many people that I come from have had to leave places they didn't want to leave, have been forced to leave behind houses and land and cities and people, and oftentimes have had it happen more than once in a lifetime. And so have carried that trauma. And then, of course, it plays out intergenerationally in all these different ways. And then I think for me, there's from my little branch of that family tree, my darkest hours involved a lot of, again, there was a lot of like warring with the body. I think I realized as I was writing this book that like the body was sort of the original site of where the story started, because it was about, you know, kind of fertility, pregnancy, et cetera. And then in trying to tell the story of the land, I couldn't tell the story of the land without telling the story of the body. And I couldn't tell the story of the body without telling the story of the people that had made the body and all these ways in which I had felt exiled from the body. And so for me, it has a lot to do with stories of eating disorders. It has a lot to do with stories of addiction, of alcoholism, of what it meant to feel kind of like an unwanted guest in my own body, and then really trying to think of ways to sort of reclaim that. And I'm really coming to think of it as like the task of a lifetime. I don't know that there's a capital A arrival that happens. I think it's just something that I'm going to keep figuring out as time goes on. And I don't think it's disconnected from larger patterns of exile. I mean, I think when you belong to identity markers where you are told there is not a place for you in the world, or the places that are yours are not yours, I do think that trickles down to, yeah, where then are you at home? Are you at home in your body? Are you at home in this host country? Are you at home in this? Like, I mean, I think there's a way in which that it plays out in all these different ways.
So how do you reconcile that self that writes, the self that remembers, the self that mothers, you know?
Of course, yeah. I mean, I think I've come to reconcile it by accepting the fact that it's going to constantly be in flux. You know, there's such a great freedom in being able to say what I hold and what I say and how I feel today might be different tomorrow, and might be different in a week, and it might be different in 10 years, and it likely will be. And, you know, it's really interesting. I think I sometimes can struggle with the purity of something, like in seeking truth, like what is the truthiest truth that I can find? And I think something that I hope to make peace with in my lifetime is this idea that it doesn't make a thing any less true just because it's changed. You know, it doesn't make the version of you that believed or really fully was embodied in a narrative. Just if that narrative changed, it doesn't discount the self that lived there. And so for me, I think that's how I make peace with like the self that writes and makes sense of something. Of course, the story is going to be different. My story is already different. I was writing about in the course of this memoir, a marriage that I was very much hoping would be able to sustain itself. And I'm currently going through a divorce. So even the marriage that I wrote about in this story, by the time this book is out, has essentially dissolved. And so what do you do then with that? You know, like does that make the marriage any less true? Does that make the story of certain elements of its love or its truth any less valid? I don't think so. I think we're just constantly in this process of editing and re-editing and repositioning sense of ourselves and other people. I do think that's the work of a lifetime. So it's incredibly unsatisfying for a perfectionist or someone that likes control, which I love control, or at least I tell myself I love control, but it doesn't make it any less real. I definitely think there was something in this project that was unlike anything else I've worked on before, in that it was, well, first of all, nonfiction. It's the first long form nonfiction thing I've done. But I do think there was something liberatory about being like, there's nowhere to hide. When I say I in a poem, I can always just say that's the speaker, that's the subject. We don't know that that's what I felt, you know. Whereas like in a memoir, you're essentially saying in the title, like, you know, this is memoir. It's like from the word memory in French. It's like, this is my memory. This is me that is remembering and putting this together and telling you the story. And there's just nowhere to hide in that. And I think while that's very terrifying, there is something, like most things that are scary, there's something freeing about it too. For me, it's kind of changed my relationship to how I conceptualize some of these things in ways that I feel like it's unlike anything I've ever worked on in my life, because it forced me to have to confront not just my memories and my recollection of things, but also just what is truly my commitment to the truth here. You know, even if that truth is what happens if that truth actually doesn't sit well with me? This is in some ways just kind of what I have at my disposal, is the ability to tell stories in this way. And so it's effective for me, you know what I mean? And so like, that's how I've changed my mind about things. That's how I've learned about things. That's how I've understood things differently in the world. The hope is that everyone shows up for these moments historically with what we have in our arsenal that we have access to. I'm a psychologist and I'm a storyteller. And so I'm going to use what I can to try to do the work that I can. Again, with the hope that that will be effective. We don't know. We'll see. But I do think there's something to be said for just like, you show up with what you have. You just hope that that's enough. And sometimes it is and sometimes it isn't. And I think anytime there's as much at stake as there is right now, it's always going to feel like it's not enough, which is certainly how it feels now. But yeah, the privilege of having some degree of safety or separateness is that you use that safety and separateness, hopefully, in helping others and showing up for others. That's kind of the ideal. And people who have access to certain spaces should be using them in the service of people that don't, is, again, just a general philosophy that I have. It's outside of, I mean, certainly contained within this moment, but outside of it as well. I think for some people, there is this idea of like, why would you even expose yourself in any way? You know, like, even if you're doing it with kindness or sweetness or consideration, like, just why would we even take these chances? I think that's also like the thing of the writer or the artist in general versus other people. It's like there is kind of almost like a compulsion to be known, you know, or a compulsion to be able to tell a thing that is definitely not something that everybody has. And I think it's like just as hard as it is for me to understand how someone wouldn't have that, it's just as hard for another person to be like, why do you even need to tell any of this stuff? I think it's been, I think that's been an interesting thing with my mother and me. It's kind of like finding a way to arrive at together this thing that we're just like, well, I guess we just sort of need different things, you know. It's, and it's a kind of safety, you know. Why would we keep reopening the thing? Hubs, you know, you can let the past be in the past. I think that's very much a way that people have survived so many things. And again, who am I to, like, it's very easy to pretend that one way is better than another, you know what I mean? Or it's like, well, no, this is more honest, or I'm more, it's like, but not really, you know. That's just how it's the way that comes more naturally to me. That's all. I was born in the States. I was born with different kinds of privileges. I was born in between two cultures. I think there's a lot of elements of it that play into it. Life without stakes is I don't know that anyone would want it. And that doesn't mean that you want to like really be out here suffering 24/7. But I think there's something about like, I want to live a life of consequence, and I want to live a life that has stakes in it. And I want to believe that because that means that things matter to you. And it's so much less painful to live in a way where things don't matter, but it's just, it also feels so much, I don't know, I think it would feel a little bit more hollow too. It's interesting because in rewriting this, which I guess is a way of rewriting the memory of it, I found myself revisiting certain sites that I go to often, either in dream or in memory or in retelling. And so many of them took place in Lebanon, which is a place that I lived for almost a decade, but in a pretty influential part of my life. So like, or time in my life. So like high school and college. And I don't think I realized how much the Mediterranean, how profoundly linked it was to my upbringing. And that's, it's interesting because I'm not someone, I'm actually quite afraid of the ocean and I don't really swim in it. And I'll like kind of go in like up to my thigh and just splash around and whatever. But that there was some, there that it is the backdrop of almost every formative memory I have during that era. And also like, you know, where I went to high school and sort of the mountain regions in Lebanon. And I think I spent a lot more time, if not in nature, because I've never camped, right? I think I've always thought of myself as very much someone that's embedded in cities, the telling of these stories and in writing them down. It was interesting because, you know, a memoir is different than a novel, but you're still having to do some degree of like character analysis and also like setting. It was astonishing how much setting took place in places, if not in nature, at least adjacent to it, how much of it connected to, and also of nature in imagination. So like thinking about, in particular in Palestine, like how much time I spend thinking about places that I have never been, or the or eras in which I've never been of those places, imagining my parents, my grandparents, my great-grandparents in places that I haven't had access to. I feel like I forget about land a lot. And that actually feels like very much part of the Palestinian condition is like, you are sort of, it's not dissimilar to other indigenous movements where it's like, you are actually kind of dislocated from land, kind of by design, and then you're made to feel outside of it. But it's funny how it still finds a way to sneak back in these really glorious ways. And so even though I like to tell a story of myself as being somebody not connected to land or not connected to nature or in exile from it, it's still remarkably present in all my fiction, all of my poetry, and certainly this book. I think that it's almost like in some ways the specificity of Palestine also becomes kind of a universality where it's sort of like you can stay in this specific example because there is something about this experience that makes it specific, right? It's happening because it's been sanctioned to happen in this way, right? Because it is not possible to slaughter tens of thousands of people without consequence unless you have made those people less than people, unless there has been a very effective project of dehumanization that's been carried out against the people that are being killed. No, it's not. I mean, I think it's a time of fear. I don't think I'm alone in that. I think I'm scared for people that I love. I'm scared for people that are quite vulnerable. I'm scared for my students. I'm scared for a lot of international students. There's a lot of international folks that I work with, international folks that I love. I think there's a lot of people who I worry about. It's like I worry for the people in the spaces that are most vulnerable. I worry for the places that I feel like are engaging in complicity because that is going to be such a heavy legacy to endure later on. How people and places and entities comport themselves in moments like this are, they'll be remembered. There will always be people that remember it. And so I'm kind of two minds because I understand what fear does. It contracts. It makes you not want to take risks. It makes you want to get really insular and be like, I need to protect myself and mine and my people and my, that's it, my little bubble. And whatever happens outside of that is none of my business. And it's really difficult in times of fear to stay open and to remember that we are really interconnected. That, I mean, this whole idea of like, what's happening to children over there isn't affecting my children over here. And it's like, there is no such thing as children over there. There really isn't. There is no such thing as, you know, this idea of like someone else's kid. And I think when you really drop into that, it's a lot to take in and it can be haunting in a very different way. So I can understand why people turn away from that sort of thinking. But yeah, I mean, I worry about all of it. You know, I worry about, again, the precedents that are being set, what's going to happen next, what's already happened. And I think also international, like, I think it's easy to, like, I think, you know, we here can get really Americentric. But I think like also what are the consequences of what's happening here across the world? The same way that what were the consequences of things that were happening over there, over here? It's all so deeply entwined. And I think people are starting to really see that. And yeah, it means that like what you do in your own backyard really is of consequence everywhere.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to these highlights. To listen to the latest episodes or learn more about participating in exhibitions or interviews, click on subscribe. Thank you for listening.